ABC Radio Australia.
Richard Curtin is a Pacific Labour Mobility Specialist. He is a research fellow at the Australian National University's Development Policy Centre, and he joins us now. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Now, we've just heard mixed opinions about whether Australia should reopen its border to Pacific workers. Do you think we should?
Definitely. I wrote a blog last week for the Development Policy Centre saying that there's all the indications are that we're going to have a major labour shortage in the horticulture harvesting time, which is about to start in September.
Now, how big a shortfall could there be? And my question is, couldn't Australians who've lost their jobs here in other industries pick up the work instead?
Well, we think that the shortfall could be as much as 40,000 people. It all depends on how many backpackers leave the country and how many seasonal workers leave the country, because there's already about 6,000 to 7,000 seasonal workers here, and they're being moved around the country to take up available work. But on the issue of local job seekers, I think that that has to be proven whether people are able and willing to come from the urban areas to go into remote regional areas to work, whether there's enough accommodation. The evidence that I've seen from approved employers' labour market testing, which they're required to do when they move workers to another area, shows that in fact the number of Australian residents applying is very low. There are applicants, but they're largely backpackers. So I think that the overseas experience has certainly been that many people might show an interest, but relatively few people accept an offer of employment. And there are various reasons for that. Often it's to do with accommodation, or it's to do with the fact that they're being required to commit themselves to work for a set period of time.
So how could Pacific Islanders fill that gap if borders are closed? You know, we do know that there have actually been some seasonal workers going back to their home countries in the past week. So how could they fill this gap?
I think that a special pathway needs to be created. And the model for this is Germany. Just recently, Germany announced on the 16th of June, they're going to allow seasonal workers in from other European Union states without restriction. And that's the numbers without restriction, but in terms of hygiene standards, they're required to work as fixed teams to reduce the risk of spreading the virus. And if one worker becomes ill, the whole team must be isolated. But Germany set up an open pathway for workers to come in under strict hygiene standards. And they've got a death rate from COVID-19 of 9,000 deaths. And Australia's death rate is extremely low at only 104. So I think that we could easily set up a carefully structured pathway for seasonal workers to come into Australia and go into remote areas and work.
Other than Germany, are there any other countries in the world at the moment that we can look to where it's being done and it's actually working safely?
Yes, the UK has brought in a number of seasonal workers. I think France has done it as well. There's a huge demand for seasonal workers in Europe, and they're making every effort to make sure that the workers that come in, of course, are practicing health safety standards. So Europe is a clear example. Canada is another example. Canada also has a much higher mortality rate from COVID-19 than Australia, but I think it's something like 20,000 workers have come in from the Caribbean to work in Canada. I mean, basically, the issue is that food supply is under threat unless there's a workforce to be able to harvest it. And that message hasn't got through to the population at large in Australia. Once it does, I think there'll be an acceptance that there's a need to have a dedicated workforce to do the harvest.
So why is the Australian government so slow to act in terms of getting Pacific Island seasonal workers back into the country?
Very good question. I think in general, at the state level, there's a high level of caution from political leaders and probably from the population. Just recently, the big increase, or the increase up to 75 cases in Victoria, will only make that caution even greater. So that's the difficulty. I think there's an exaggerated caution that's stopping a special pathway being set up.
Now, could a potential way to get this pathway set up is having the Pacific workers tested in the, you know, the nominated workers tested before they leave their country of origin, now that most Pacific countries do have that testing capacity?
That's right, exactly. The process that the Ni Vanuatu workers went through in the last week going back to their country is the same process that needs to be used for workers to come back to Australia. Testing beforehand, well, in their case, they're going back into 14 days quarantine. The same 14-day quarantine may or may not be necessary. I don't think it is if they're going into a remote area. But they should work as a separate team and make sure that they're practicing very strict social distancing measures.
Now, would Pacific Island governments even allow their citizens to travel and work in Australia? There has been nothing said publicly by any of the governments since Vanuatu announced earlier this year that it was temporarily suspending its participation in this program.
Yes, I think there is widespread caution on the sending country side. I think a country like Fiji with a more careful testing system that they seem to have implemented there and the use of a tracking app on mobile phones, etc., should be more open to allowing their workers to travel. But other countries with health systems that they're still waiting to ramp up to ensure that they've got the testing processes working and the testing processes can produce results quickly, maybe more cautious. Certainly Tonga and Samoa are very cautious because of their experience with the measles outbreak. But Solomons and Vanuatu should be in a more confident position to be able to do it. I think they look to Australia and see some cases and think that that's going to be a problem when, in fact, those number of cases is extremely low for the size of the population.
Now, finally, talking about health capacity, would it require more protections for Pacific workers when they do come to Australia? We have reported here on Pacific Beat in recent weeks concerns about access to health care. Could it potentially see Pacific Islanders at risk of turning up for work when they're still not feeling well, you know, in this kind of situation?
Yes, I've noted those stories. One case of workers under their health insurance having to travel from a great distance over 100 kilometres to get the relevant doctor under that insurance. Yes, that's an example of the increased attention that would have to be paid to ensure that those issues were addressed. And that's what I mean by a special pathway. It's not just testing before and after. It's making sure that there's much greater attention given to allowing people to practice health safe standards.
Richard Curtin, thank you so much for joining us on a Pacific Beat this morning.
Thank you.
That was Richard Curtin, a Pacific Labour Mobility Specialist who used to work with the Australia's Foreign Affairs Department, now with the Australian National University. And we have requested information from the Australian government on its plans, but are yet to get a response. We also regularly invite the Minister for the Pacific, Alex Hawke, for an interview on the program.